Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our call, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, if you think that overweight people are overweight because they eat all the time, you may be wrong. You may be wrong. And then we're going to talk about teens, smartphones, and sex. And some new research that shows that teens who have smartphones that connect to the internet are more likely to engage in sex with people who they find on the internet. And I think as a parent, this is something that's really important
to discuss. And a good recipe?
Yes, our recipe is rainbow beans and rice. People loved it before. They will love it again. It is a yummy recipe, and I guarantee it is tasty.
Sounds good to me. I don't think I remember that one, but I'm sure it was delicious. Now, Zorba, to the phones we go. Let's welcome our first caller, a listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Knoxville, hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I've got a question about low-carb or no-carb diets. My wife wanted to lose some weight. It wasn't a whole lot. It was just about 12 pounds, what she did. And her diet now consists of no flour or grains. She eats a lot of meat, and especially fatty meat like bacon, dairy, nuts, and eggs. She doesn't eat so many vegetables and fruits, just a little paltry amount. And she, you know, the benefits of this, you know, she said that, I mean, she has lost weight. Her cholesterol's down. She feels better and has more energy. She has no acid reflux. And when she exercises, she says she doesn't get any muscle soreness. And she attributes the whole thing to this low-carb, no-carb diet.
Yeah.
What really concerns me is all the chemicals that are in the meat, because the meat passes so slowly through your system. And I worry about things like colon cancer and stuff for her. And this doesn't seem like a balanced diet to me.
Isn't this Zorba, may he rest in peace, the Atkins diet?
Yes, may he rest in peace. He's been gone for a while, hasn't he? Old, fat Dr. Atkins. That's what I always like to say. He was 238 pounds, something like that, when he died. Claimed he was thin from his diet, but he wasn't thin from his diet. And he, by the way, took his diet from an old British diet called the mutton and bacon diet, where the overweight wealthy Brits in the 1880s who wanted to lose weight would eat nothing but mutton and bacon and lose weight. I'll tell you a bit about the Atkins diet. There are issues.
That's just what we're talking about, the Atkins diet.
So first of all, I've got to ask a question. How much weight has your wife lost?
She's lost about 12 pounds. She wasn't really overweight.
Okay, so she lost 12
pounds. But she just wanted to lose some.
Okay, so this is what happens. All diets in America, if you look at people 2 years later, only 5% have kept the weight off. Period. Do a diet. I don't care which diet it is. You know, the Eat All Water diet, the Stillman diet, the Atkins diet, the South Beach diet, the North Beach diet, the Each Beach diet. It doesn't make a difference what it is. Everybody, 2 years later, unless they make a change in their lifestyle, that's a serious change. They gain the weight back within 2 years. It doesn't matter if you lose it for 2 months. You want it off. Now, if we look at the Atkins diet, it is very true, I think, that some people are much more satisfied when they eat fat. And I think many humans are more satisfied when they eat fat. So they may start to eat fewer calories. But fruits and vegetables have lots of stuff in them. And like you say, is it balanced? No, it's not balanced. No, not eating fruits and vegetables are not good. So you look at the South Beach diet, which is really a better diet because it had more fish in it and had some fruits and vegetables. It was a better diet. So can you do it? Yeah, it may work in the short run, but in the long run, it's not great. However, there's very good evidence that when we physicians started to put people on a more carbohydrate-loaded diet, that didn't work either. America got heavier and heavier. So my recommendation is go for balance. The Mediterranean diet, that'll be on our website, you know, zorbapastor.org, and of course you can find us on Facebook. But the Mediterranean diet is a very good diet to follow. And then if you want to eat more meat, You know, go for meat that basically, or go for protein that's better. Make sure it's fish a couple times a week. If you're going to eat beef, you can eat beef, but make it a tenderloin beef that has less fat. If you're eating just bacon, I mean, it's not good for you. Bacon is not a healthy product. Does it taste good? Of course it tastes good. That's why people like bacon. It's really good. You know, nobody says, oh, wow, I can't wait to go and have my broccoli. Well, some people do. Mm-hmm. They're the vegans and vegetarians, but the omnivores on the whole like a little bit of bacon every so often to spice things up. But you don't want to eat half a pound a day or a pound. So the answer is, can you do it without harm? I don't think it necessarily causes harm in the short run. But is it balanced? No. So my recommendation to your lovely wife is say you got to eat some vegetables. Now, fruits, not as much because they have more calories, but you got to get her to eat some veggies.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
I'm on your side. That's what you got to tell her. Dr. Zorba says, I'm on your side. She's on the wrong side of the diet.
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Again, 800-462-7413, the number you'll use when you talk with Zorba. And now, Zorba, a listener with us from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a question about constantly peeling lips. My bottom lip, it's really just my bottom lip. It's not my top one, but it is constantly peeling, and I've tried every kind of chapstick, and nothing really helps. I can't wear lipstick because it doesn't stay on, and it's just embarrassing. And in the winter, like right now, it is actually pretty painful.
Mm-hmm. It's been going on for a long time, short time?
Yeah, I'm not really sure when it started, but I would say at least 5 or 6 years.
Okay, I have a couple of thoughts, first of all. The stuff that we brush our teeth with or use for mouthwash has a number of chemicals that can be very irritating. When you brush your teeth, generally the toothpaste goes more on the lower lip than the upper lip. When you think about it, it may foam into the upper lip, but it's more on the lower lip because of gravity and you're spitting into the sink. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're spitting into the sink. So if we look from a toothpaste point of view, that may be part of the issue. You may be allergic to some of the components. So I would immediately try a number of different tooth products. First of all, the simplest, easiest thing that you can try for a few days to a week to see if that's it is regular old-fashioned baking soda. And I mean dry baking soda. You take it, you get a little package of Arm & Hammer. That's the kind my mother bought, so I recommend that to everybody. It's all the same. Baking soda. Put your toothbrush in. Brush your teeth with baking soda.
You recommend that. Nobody does that.
Well, I'm going to recommend.
Do you brush
with
baking
soda? No, I'm telling you, for 3 to 5 days.
Just a short period of time.
Just a short, not forever, for a short period of time. Yeah, you've obviously brushed.
Then it comes back again.
Wait a second. You've obviously brushed with baking soda because you know what it tastes like, right?
I don't, actually.
No. Oh,
I don't want to know
baking
either.
Soda? It's not so bad. It's not so good either. But then you'll know right away if that's it. Then what you do is you experiment and you go to a toothpaste like Sensodyne. Or you go to a baking soda toothpaste from there. You go to another toothpaste that has other things that does not have fluoride. A non-fluoridated toothpaste, because fluoride is often the issue. That's number one. Number two, hydrocortisone cream, prescription strength from your doctor, 2.5% hydrocortisone cream, can make a huge difference. You put it on once or twice or three times a day, and it will often get it under control. But my guess, it's the toothpaste.
Okay.
What about hydration? If you drink a lot of water?
Hydration is an issue, but the problem is if you drink a lot of water, it doesn't come through your skin. It's not as if we're really prunes. And when we drink a lot of water, it kind of goes through the skin and we prune up. We still have a problem, and especially during the wintertime. But you've got the problem 24/7. I think it's a toothpaste issue, hydrocortisone cream, prescription strength, and as I said, try baking soda first. It's yummy. You'll like it. You'll like it. It's yummy.
Okay, I'll try those things.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
You know, you mock me, Tom.
No, I'm sorry.
You mock
I'm
me when it comes to, but you've never tried it.
No.
Try
it.
You like it.
You should try it before I complain.
You should try it. I mean, this is that complex. Yeah. In fact, on your way home, I have a recommendation. I'm going to give
stop
you
stop at the
a,
store.
Stop at the store.
Get some
get
bacon
a box
soda.
Of bacon soda.
Brush my teeth with it for 5 to 7 days.
And let's see what happens.
And call you in the morning.
And call me in the morning.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, here's a study that shows that People who are overweight are not necessarily overeaters.
That's right. It's interesting. You think that overweight people are eating all the time. Although there are good studies that show that 40% of our calories come from snacks in America, the real question is, do overweight people eat more through the day? And this was a study published in the Journal of the American Dietetic Association that actually looked at about a little over 250 normal weight and overweight people to see who ate all the time. And, I mean, I would think that overweight people are constantly eating, but the answer was no. The answer was, on the whole, people who were normal weight had more snacks than people who were overweight. People who were overweight often had three meals a day and, like, one snack, but they had about two – they ate about roughly 2,2100 calories, but they were less active. And the people who ate – who were actually the normal weight, ate 1,800 calories. So they ate a few hundred calories less. But they exercised more, but they often snacked more. They often had one or two more snacks a day.
But the snacks, of course, would be included in the calorie count.
Oh, yes, yes.
There was overweight people are
eating more calories. They still eat
more calories.
There's no doubt about it. But they often get it through their meals. Now, this is counterintuitive. You know, I tell people, how many snacks do you have? I always counsel people on weight, and they'll say, well, yeah, I don't snack much. And I always think, well, ha ha, people don't have insight into their food. And what happens is they really do snack much, I think. But in the end, the study showed no. They may only eat three meals a day.
They eat more in their meals,
that's
so they aren't hungry for snacks.
It's
so
portion control.
Yeah.
It's portion control, and that's hard. In America, we want to have the freedom to eat what we want, when we want, as much as we want.
Yeah.
And the answer is that really is not the case. So it may not be that you have to give up snacking. It's just that where are you going to get 200 to 300 less calories a day? And that's the bottom line issue.
Got it. 800-462-7413. And to El Paso, Texas, we go now. Hello.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, thank you first for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have had eczema for my entire life and thought I had kind of figured out some things that were causing it. About 15 years ago, I started getting little patches on my face. And when I did, I thought, gee, I really don't want to have that. So I did kind of a fast where I didn't eat really much of anything and kind of experimented and figured out that wheat and corn were problems for me. So I haven't eaten wheat and corn I fudge a little bit now and again, but I've been able to maintain control of it for a while. But recently I've had a really severe reaction and flare up on my face and my neck, and only on my face and my neck. The rest of me has been fine. And I did go to a dermatologist, that's who I could get in to see, and got some, the new creams, whatever she had, and a shot of cortisone, and none of that was very effective. It's just really taken a very long time for me to get control over this. Is this something worth pursuing with an allergist? Are they going to just come back and say, well, we don't know what it is, and good luck? I don't know quite how to try to figure out what it is that's causing this horrible flare-up that I've had in the last few weeks.
Well, the issue with flare-ups in eczema is that they flare up often for no reason at all. So that's exactly it. So now I want to talk a little bit about wheat and corn. You can limit yourself if you have allergies, if you have eczema and you've got, you feel that you have allergies, you can get to the point where you limit yourself and you're not eating anything because, in other words, the flare-ups are going to occur and you're going to associate it with food because temporally that's when you eat. Now, we know that if you eat nothing but corn, for example, and nothing else, that's where we discovered pellagra. Pellagra were in people in the South, in the U.S., and many other places where they just were on a corn diet. They had no variety of foods. They have no B vitamin that is associated, that isn't in corn. So limiting yourself to one or two foods is not good. But I think limiting one or two foods is also not good.
Yeah.
So I think that basically what you ought to do is go back to wheat and corn. I don't think it's going to make any difference at all because you've noticed that. And if your dermatologist, if it isn't working for you, you may need another dermatologist. I don't think an allergist is going to show you much. They do skin tests for food. They don't do skin tests, but they're not good at discovering which food is bad for you. The best way to discover it is you challenge with the food, you stop with the food, you challenge with the food, you stop with the food. And if every time you take the food, you have problems, and every time you get rid of it, you don't have problems, that's sort of the bottom line issue. I think you've got eczema and it flares, and you've got to work with your dermatologist. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the disease.
Yeah, It's pretty frustrating.
Oh, it's very frustrating. That's very, very frustrating. Are you a little bit better now since you've had the shot of cortisone?
You know, usually when I've had a shot of cortisone, and I've had to do that a number of times over the years, within 24 hours, I feel some relief, and this time, nothing.
So I would call your doc back. That's what I would say. You may need
I did go back. I went back in, and she was very sympathetic, mm-hmm. but not able to offer much help in that regard. So she did a little biopsy, I guess, to test for bacterial or viral infections or maybe for some sort of lupus. I don't know. And I haven't heard back the results of that.
So she did a biopsy to see if there's another diagnosis.
She did.
Which indeed may be the case. No, I'd stick with the dermatologist. Sounds like your dermatologist is doing a good job. I wouldn't do allergy testing, and I wouldn't get rid of wheat and corn. That's not the issue. You got rid of it, and you're still having flares. So, and you've had flares before. So I don't think this is a wheat or corn issue.
Is it possibly something else now? Can it happen that quickly?
Yes, eczema, and it just happens out of the blue. We don't have a good handle as to why it happens. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we know there are offenders, but we often don't know if there's an offender. So,
yeah.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Well, Zorba, we know you can offer great advice. Now let's put you on the clock for another round of rapid fire. Are you ready?
I am ready.
First up is David, who asks, why is it that when I get hungry, my skin gets very itchy? This drives me crazy.
That's because you're itching for food, David. Eat on.
Janice is next up with a B12 question.
Okay, B12, Janice. I'm ready.
You mentioned on your show that B12 was useless. But Dr. Oz recommends taking it for better memory. I don't wish to take pills that don't do anything for you.
I don't think B12 has any evidence it gives you better memory. It's useless. It's not useless for pernicious anemia. We need B12, but I don't think there's any evidence B12 improves your memory. At least I don't remember reading a study about it.
Well, there are a lot of us, Zorba, who wish that when Oprah was looking around for with a funny name,
she would
have picked Dr. Zorba instead of Dr. Oz.
Instead of Dr. Oz. Why isn't it Dr. Zorba? That's right.
We move to Kathy now, who has a question on vaccines. Is there a vaccine to prevent Lyme's disease in humans? I know there is a vaccine to dogs.
That's right. Woof Woof can take it, but we can't because there is none for humans at this point. And one day, maybe there will be.
Are we doing dog tests?
We're doing dog tests, that's it, exactly.
Moving on, let's help out Elizabeth in Carbondale, Illinois, who wants your second opinion. She's currently nursing a toddler and taking 25 milligrams of Zoloft. Her doc was okay with it. What say you, Zorba?
I think that's just fine. It should be okay for you, and it's safe for the baby.
Next, a listener named The Great White Dope throws in their two cents about ALS, writing, wouldn't Lou Gehrig be the most famous person with ALS since it's called Lou Gehrig's disease, not Stephen Hawking?
Absolutely. However, who watches baseball these days?
Well, maybe you were meaning the most famous live person.
Most famous live person. Hey, but I'm a scientist. I always watch physicists. Whenever they're on TV, I turn it on and watch them from start to finish.
Well, finally, an iPad-savvy listener informs us, you mentioned that people do not take baths anymore. Just letting you know that I listen to your show while in the bathtub every chance I can.
I wonder whether or not you text on your iPad while you're there.
We'll let Zorba catch his breath so he's ready for the next edition of Rapid Fire. So make sure to get your question in for the next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We are looking forward to more of your calls coming up after our recipe, some interesting research to talk over, and of course our medical myth buster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But right now, before our next call, recipe time, Zorba, and today we have a colorful edition of Recipes from the Vault. Today's recipe is for rainbow beans and rice. This recipe popped back into our heads, courtesy of a request by Ed in Springfield, Missouri, who needed an extra or replacement copy and asked us to key into the vault for one. I think Adam is adding a retina scan to the recipe vault entry system.
I love it. We need a retinal scan every now and then.
He claims he's going to have it more secured than the vault in the movie Die Hard in a few years. But we digress. Here it is, Ed, the encore recipe for rainbow beans and rice.
See, Die Hard, this is the live long vault. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. Rainbow beans and rice. Get out your pens, folks, because this recipe has lots and lots of ingredients. But it's easy and simple to actually make. So lots of ingredients, simple. It's not a hard recipe.
And since it's from the vault, if they don't have pens, we aren't going to put it on the computer?
No.
We're still going to put it on the computer.
We'll connect with Facebook. Social media, the whole thing. We might even tweet about it. No problem. Okay, start out with 1 tablespoonful of olive oil.
Big tea olive oil.
Okay, now 1 medium, and I'm going to read you 3 things. 1 medium red onion, red bell pepper, green bell pepper, all of them diced.
1 medium red onion, red bell pepper, green bell pepper, all diced.
That's right, all diced. 2 cloves of garlic diced.
2 cloves of garlic diced.
A medium zucchini.
A medium zucchini.
Yeah, you know, if it's not zucchini season, you actually have to buy them in the grocery store.
Do I put it in whole season, or do I dice that one up too?
You dice it. Okay, ready? Now you've got 3 cans. Mm-hmm. Red beans, drain them and rinse them. Black beans, drain them and rinse them. Unsalted yellow corn, drain them and rinse them.
Mm-hmm. Cans of red beans, black beans, unsalted yellow corn.
That's right. Now, by the way, you know, you rinse it because there's that muck. There's the juice on top of the beans, not so much on the corn. And actually, it'll make the beans to come alive a lot better. Mm-hmm. 1 cup of green salsa.
Cup of green salsa.
Cup of water.
Cup of water.
Teaspoon of brown mustard.
Little tea brown mustard.
1/2 teaspoon of red pepper, black pepper, cumin, and salt. Half a teaspoon of each.
Red pepper, black pepper, cumin, and salt.
That's right. And remember, buy your cumin in an Asian or Mexican grocery store. It is cheaper.
And maybe we could cheat a little bit on those spicy things.
Of course. Like double it or triple it. Yeah. Exactly. 2 cups of white rice cooked.
2 cups white rice cooked.
1 tablespoon of fresh cilantro.
Big tea fresh cilantro.
And 6 tablespoons of low-fat sour cream.
6 big tea low-fat sour cream.
In a large skillet, heat the olive oil over medium heat. Sauté the red onion, red and green peppers, garlic, and zucchini for about 4 to 5 minutes until the onions are tender. Then add the beans, the corn, the salsa, the water, the mustard, and the spices. Stir while bringing it to a light boil. Light boil, not a big boil. Reduce the heat and simmer for about 30 minutes, stirring occasionally. Remove from the heat. Ladle it over the rice. Garnish it with a pinch of fresh cilantro and a dollop of sour cream and serve it hot. It is good. It is a wonderfully good recipe. You will like it. It's really wonderful. And nowadays, more so than even in 2004 where this recipe came from, you have more and more times when people come over and they have specific desires or likes. This is a vegan recipe. You don't have to, you know, you can get rid of the sour cream. It's a vegetarian recipe. And if you wanted to, you could even put chunks of chicken on top of this or beef. In other words, it's a recipe you can make for the whole family, even if the family has different desires and likes, because everybody likes beans.
Good deal. If there's a recipe that your dog ate or you feel needs an encore performance, let us know about it, and it might just end up being our next recipe from the vault. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's welcome another listener, this one in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, first I want to tell Zorba I appreciate your professional expertise. And Tom, I appreciate your down-to-earth kind of questions to laymen like me.
And my lacking in professional expertise.
Well, no, you can take that however you want.
Okay, how can we help?
Okay, I have a question about nutrition. First a general question, then specific question. As I understand it, it's best to limit the highly refined food products because they're stripped of their nutrients and can cause big swings in blood sugar. Is that correct?
Well, not totally, but go on. Go on
okay.
with your question.
All right. The specific question is about sugars. I'm confused because in the health food stores, the sweeteners are generally honey or maple syrup or turbinado sugar, and I have no idea what that is, or evaporated cane juice. And the impression I get, which may be wrong, is that those forms of sugars are less processed than, you know, white table sugar and corn syrup.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Okay.
First of all, you are correct. It is wrong to assume that, because when you look at things like turbinado sugar, which is basically sugar from just another vegetable product, I mean, that's what it is. It, you know, the implication is this is really not as refined. This is sugar that is good for you. And the fact is, anything that is super sweet, other than a totally artificial type sweetener, is going to produce the same number of calories. It's going to produce the same insulin surge, put you at risk probably for diabetes. That's the present thought, because we have these, you know, huge bursts of sugar. So, I mean, I used to be back in the day, I used to believe that honey was healthier than
table sugar.
Better for you. You can use all the honey you want to because it's safe, because it's natural. It comes from bees. I have no idea why I thought that. I mean, it's really obviously an animal product and not a vegetable product because it's processed from bees. And lo and behold, it isn't. It still produces that incredible increase in insulin. So, you know, you may choose raw sugar. You may choose, you know, another type of sugar, but sugar is sugar is sugar. Edna St. Vincent Millay said that years ago about the rose, and she was right about sugar.
Okay.
So I think it's eat smart. That's kind of my thought. Yeah. Eat smart, be smart, stay smart, and that's sort of the general way I would look at things.
Well, I look at the fiber content. That's one of the things that helps me see, you know, what things are probably more or less refined.
Absolutely. Perfect way of looking at it. You are Ms. Fiber. Congratulations and thank
well,
you.
Well, I've been called worse, so.
Thanks for your call.
All right, bye.
And thanks a lot for the strokes, too. 1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener in Cloquet, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I am the exception to what you were talking about with the honey and the sugar, because I can't tell the difference between them because neither one of them tastes. I have pretty much lost most of my sense of smell and taste. Hmm. And I'm frustrated and don't know what to do about it.
Can I ask how old you are?
I am 67.
Uh-huh. So when did this happen? Happen over time or happen quickly?
It seemed to have come on about 6 or 7 years ago. Uh-huh.
Suddenly, like one day you had your taste, which
just
is really
about
a sense of smell, and one day just about.
Well, isn't that common, Zorba, for as we get older, we tend to lose our taste?
Well, we tend to lose a lot of our senses.
Along with everything
else. Along with everything else, that's right. Your eyes, your hearing, your taste. But for most people, they don't lose their sense of taste. I mean, their sense of taste decreases. If you cannot tell the difference between a spoonful of sugar and a spoonful of honey, and of course, there's a textural difference, but if you can't tell a difference, I mean, that's, you know, you can significantly smell that. You went to your doctor at all? Or?
Well, I did, and this was when I was probably about 60 when this happened, and I did go to an ENT, and he did a surgical procedure. I think it was like a sinus operation of some sort, if I recall. Because he thought maybe it was connected to a sinus, and there was no change at all. tried the sinus wash, I think it's called, something like that.
So it didn't do anything
Nothing.
For your sinus at all. A couple of the things. You've not had a stroke, correct? Because strokes
right.
can do it.
Right.
Any trauma to your head? You know.
No.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I had a patient of mine in my practice, and she, her husband was an architect, and they were looking at a house, and she fell through one of the floors, hit her head, was okay, was kind of knocked semi-unconscious, recovered totally well, but she totally lost her sense of taste, zero. So she cannot tell the difference between water and vodka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
I sure do.
I mean, it tastes the same. So this is very important because from, not just from a health point of view, but from a safety point of view, it means you can't tell if food is okay
yeah.
or if
yeah.
food is bad for you and rancid, because that comes from our sense of smell.
Exactly.
Trauma can do it. Strokes can do it. Parkinson's disease can do it. Do you have Parkinson's disease?
My father had it.
Uh-huh. Parkinson's disease can actually also cause a problem with the sense of smell. You know, on the whole, the real problem is we can't turn that around.
Uh-huh.
But I would consider a neurological consultation to see if this is something neurologically. It happened many years ago. I think if you had Parkinsonism, it would tend to develop, and you would know that by now.
Yeah.
But those are the things that are there. I wish that I could help you with this.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. And before we leave our recipe segment, Zorba, it's time for you to put your money where your taste buds are. On a past show, we featured a recipe that called for white pepper, and I asked you what the difference was. You said it was a matter of taste and that you could definitely tell the difference. Well, our producer Adam has provided me, as you can see, with both ground white pepper and ground black pepper, and I've got some cucumber slices here. So, why don't you close your eyes,
okay.
and I'll dust a couple of slices
okay.
with the different peppers, and we'll see how good that tongue of yours is.
This is a taste test.
Now,
listeners
will have to trust you
yeah,
that
right.
you're really going to
yeah.
close
yeah,
your
I know,
eyes.
I'm going to close my eyes, I promise.
No cheating.
No, they can watch. There's no cheating. Go ahead. You just
okay.
put it on there.
Close your eyes right now.
Right, okay, my eyes are closed.
Okay,
eyes
here
closed.
We go. I'm taking one cucumber.
Now, should I have, like, Jeopardy music or something like that?
Da-da-da-da-da.
All right.
Yeah, all right, I'm
okay, I've got my hand on. Got my hand
I'm
on.
I'm liberally not yet. I'm not ready yet.
Okay,
keep your eyes closed and let me do
I've
this.
I got my hand out. I'm like, you know, I'm begging for the cucumber.
I'm
begging for
the
cucumber.
The thickness of the slice will.
Well, it might, but you know, remember, I said I could tell the difference.
Okay, now here comes number one.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Reach your hand out farther.
My hand is reached out. Okay.
All right.
Okay. It's cold. Okay.
Number one, you're gonna eat the whole thing. Does it taste good?
Delicious.
Can you taste a peppery taste?
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, let me know when you're done.
Okay, I'm all done.
Is your palate cleared?
Well, it would be cleared if I had like a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Spit it out.
Okay. No wine. All right,
that's
here we
good.
Go with two.
And then I'm going to have to tell you which one it is.
And right, and I have to remember which one I gave you when. And he's chewing on that one. Mm-hmm. You're detecting a significant taste difference between one and two. And number one.
White, number two is black.
Absolutely the opposite. Absolutely the opposite.
I was totally sure. I was fooled again. Fooled again.
How could you be so certain?
You know what? They are laughing on the floor in the
you'd
control
think,
room.
You think you'd say, I'm not sure of the difference.
No,
not, this is
no, absolutely. I was 100% sure one versus the other.
I think it's the mindset that white is going to come
laughing.
Before black.
Even Brad, the engineer, is laughing.
Yeah.
It's hard to
I think that because I was going to give you first white and then black, and I thought, I think the mindset
sure.
is.
I was
thought,
absolutely
anyway.
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, God.
If you have a taste,
I'm ready to sneeze now.
If you have a taste test,
how embarrassing!
If you have a taste test for public radio's favorite family doc, or just want to send in your lifestyle question, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts to the show in an email to
Zorba@wpr.org. It's as simple as black and white.
Now we have another interesting bit of research to talk about. We have some more of your calls coming up. Our medical myth buster. Maybe we'll find another way to fool Zorba before this thing is over. Here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More calls coming up, but right now, Zorba, teens who use smartphones may engage in more sex.
Right. Very interesting research that has come out that talks about teens and smartphones. It had to do with research published from the American Public Health Association. And they looked at teenagers in Los Angeles. So we have to look at a study and say, okay, Los Angeles is not the world. People who live in L.A. may think it's the entire world, but it isn't. And they looked at kids, comparing kids who had smartphones meaning access to the internet, and kids who did not have smartphones. And they found that kids who had smartphones and internet access were much more likely to engage in sex with people who they found online than people who did not have smartphones.
So this is strictly a convenience sort of thing,
where
if it's easy, then you're more likely to do it.
Well, and there are a lot of issues here, because here it is, you're a parent in the house, and you know, the internet is ubiquitous, it's all over, and your kid is on the internet, and you don't want them to find somebody on the internet to have sex with, no matter what, you know, whether they're older or younger, or the same age or anything. It's not a good idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're monitoring the computer at home, and meanwhile, they're on the smartphone in another room, which connects to the computer, and they're engaging
and
in what's going on.
Whole world for an audience. You can start by just kind of flirting around a little bit, and you can, who knows how many people
That's exactly
are available
it.
As opposed to without the smartphones where you're just face-to-face?
Oh, there are major issues here that I think are very important. And the real issue is parents are ignoring the smartphone. They're looking at the computer, they're ignoring the smartphone, and they're not necessarily talking to their kids, because in this study it showed they were more likely to find a sexual partner and more likely to engage in sex.
That's good knowledge for parents to have and to think about. They tend, I think, often to think, here's a smartphone, a good way I can keep in touch with my kids. They can keep in touch with me.
And there's something that's very important that a lot of parents don't realize. Children look up to their parents. Study after study after study shows even if they don't really like their parents a lot, they still actually pay attention to what their parents say. And I think this study shows a parent with a teenager with a smartphone has to have a good conversation and say, hey, what are you doing on the smartphone? Are you actually looking? And they should talk to their kids about teenage sex and smartphones and random encounters that are not good.
Be proactive.
Absolutely. Being proactive makes a big difference. So the bottom line with this is that 47% of the teens who had a smartphone were sexually active. So they were much more likely to be sexually active compared to 35% of the kids, the teens who did not have a smartphone. In either case, teenagers are sexually active. Random encounters on the net are not a good encounter by definition, unless you actually know the person and actually see the person. On the whole, it's a big issue. And so sex with teens is an issue. Sex with teens on the web is an issue. Smartphones is another issue.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, and a listener now, Zorba, in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I had a quick question concerning, sciatic pain. A couple years back, I had a couple of swollen discs in my back, which was causing quite a bit of sciatic pain. And the doctors put me basically on rest until it went away. I was kind of curious if there was, it's just recently come back, and I was kind of curious if there was anything as far as exercise-wise or diet-wise that I could do to make it go away quicker and prevent it from coming back.
Well, there are things you can do for sciatica. First of all, sciatica can happen kind of randomly. And this is pain, you know, from the back down the back of the leg, can be very uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable feeling, sort of pins and needly, bright, sharp feeling. You've had it. How many years has this been going on for?
It was about 3 years ago that the last time I had it. And then it's just recently come back.
Hard chairs, sitting on hard chairs can often aggravate sciatica for many people. So what are your kitchen chairs like? Those are often the hardest chairs in the house.
I don't generally use my kitchen chairs. It's usually more of a love seat that I'm sitting in.
A love seat. When you eat, you sit in a love seat? Kind of sit to the side on a couch. Well, getting back
to comfortable that way. Yeah.
Getting back to the issue at hand, but hard surfaces that you sit on can be an issue. So you want to eliminate that. You want to sit on a surface that is not hard to sit on a surface that basically has some cushioning. So that's the first thing you want to do. The second thing you want to do is you want range of motion activities for the back. So either from a physical therapist or look at back exercises online. Well, what we'll do is if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, Google it or go through Facebook. I'll give you some examples of back exercises that you can do that are on YouTube. So I'll give you some of those. Because good back exercises free up the ligaments there and really help with sciatica. And then for many people, it's taking an anti-inflammatory drug, such as one or two Aleve tablets twice a day, can make a difference and help with sciatica. And that's kind of what it does. Sciatica tends to come and go, and it's a problem. What do you do for a living?
I'm a bartender, so I'm on my feet most of the day.
Mm-hmm. Stretching exercises before you start. Stretching exercises can make a difference, really, when you're bartending. Making sure that your lower back is really better. And as I said, we'll put the ones that I would recommend on the website because that will make a difference. Okay. If you're sitting in front of a computer all day, it's making sure that chair is cushioned.
Sneaking a shot or two isn't the right idea.
That's right. A shot or two is not what I would recommend in the middle of the day. So thank you. Good luck. Let us know
what
happens.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413.
I have chronic back pain. I periodically have sciatica. It comes and it goes sort of in a random way. And what I've discovered is I'm allergic to exercise, so I have to force myself to do it. It's not a natural thing. But when I do my exercises, my sciatica gets better. Yeah. So.
You're pretty religious about your working out.
I'm somewhat religious. I'm better at it than I used to be, but I should do it every day, and I don't do it every day. But I'm more religious than I used to be.
So let's get to our medical myth buster now, Zorba. Today's myth deals with something I'm willing to wager a lot of our listeners have experienced. Prune hands, or when you get wrinkly fingers, when your hands get wet. It's long been thought that this is just from too much water absorption, but is this the case?
Well, it is from water absorption and the tip of the finger itself. What happens is when you're on the tip of the finger, there's a chemical which is keratin, the same chemical that's in our nail. And when it gets hydrated, you get wrinkly, pruney kind of fingers, and that's what they are. But the real issue is there any reason behind this happening? And there was a very interesting study in the journal Brain, Behavior, and Evolution that looked at wet wrinkles and discovered something interesting. This was an evolutionary neurobiologist looked at about 30 fingers wrinkled by water and found that they all had the same pattern of unconnected channels that kind of diverting away from one another to try to get the water away from the finger when it was no longer wet. But found something else, that pruney fingers are actually better at lifting than slick, wet fingers.
Oh, yeah, I would understand that.
Better,
they would grip better.
Right. So from an evolutionary point of view, it was useful when you're in water. Remember, from an evolutionary point of view, people didn't really soak in tubs, but they may be in wet environments. They may be, and their fingers get all wet, but you want to be able to grip. So pruney fingers were better. So they don't prune so that you can complain to your mom after you're in the tub. Hey, look at my fingers, Mom. They're pruny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They pruned for a reason. So, and then you can also get rid of the water because of these channels.
So what's an evolutionary neurobiologist?
That's a good question, Tom. And we'll leave that for next week's show.
Okay. For now, we won't let your myth slip through our fingers. Just send it to the show to be busted in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Let's get back to the phones. A listener with us now in Grady, Alabama. Hello.
Hey. How are you?
Fine. What can we help you with?
Okay. I've suffered from tinnitus for years. I've been to doctors, and some of it's hereditary, I know. But a lot of it is because I didn't protect my ears through my youth. And I was wondering if there's anything over-the-counter that I could take that would help it. It's just constant ringing.
I like to talk about tinnitus or tinnitus because I have in the past experienced problems with it. What have you tried to do to get rid of it?
I've tried all kind of home remedies and nothing's worked, and I've been to the doctor and they pretty much told me there was nothing they could actually do about it because it's nerve damage. But I suffer from it sometimes so bad at night that I have to have a radio going or something to drown out the noise.
Yeah, you say suffer. What symptoms do you have?
A high-pitched ringing, constant. I mean, 24/7.
24/7. You said you got this in your youth. What did you do in your youth?
Well, I shot guns without ear protection. Was around race cars a good part of my life.
Uh-huh.
And my mother suffers from nerve deafness.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's it's all of those things that'll do it. And of course, you know, it's the loud sounds that destroy the little hairs in the cochlea, which is where we do our hearing, and that's the process of it. So there's certain things that we can't do. First of all, unfortunately, there are no cures for it. But we can't cure high blood pressure. We can't cure high cholesterol. We can't cure diabetes. In medicine, there are a lot of things we can't cure. We can cure a staph infection, but we can't cure these other things. So in medicine, there are many, many things that we don't cure, but we deal with. So with tinnitus or tinnitus, what you have to do is you have to mask the sounds. That's basically what happens. And then the brain doesn't attend to them. So I'm sure you've noticed that when you're in a quiet room, it's the loudest, correct?
Yes.
What do you do for a living, by the way?
I'm a mechanic.
So
I'm around engines and stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. But I tend to protect my ears a lot more than I used to, you know, with earplugs and stuff.
And that's very good. Does it bother you during the day?
Yes. I mean, sometimes during the day, if it's quiet, mm-hmm. That's when it really, you know, I hear it.
Kicks in. I have a couple other questions. When you go out to eat, you're in a restaurant, it's a noisy restaurant, can you hear the other people or do you have trouble hearing them?
I can hear them lots of times, but I can't understand what they're saying. In other words, I can hear sounds from a long ways off that other people probably don't hear.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, it's masked over by the ringing.
Mm-hmm.
It gets garbled.
Mm-hmm. I got it. And it's loud. It's actually loud sounds, often women's voices that are a little bit worse because they're louder. They're a higher pitch. A couple of suggestions. First of all, you want to get your hearing tested to see if you can get a hearing aid, and a hearing aid will be worthwhile. Because what will happen is when you amplify the normal sounds that you should hear, including speech, the tinnitus during the daytime will be easier to take. So hearing aid is number one. You want to go, you want to look at it. Hearing aids are also, there are federal rules that govern hearing aids where you can get, if you don't like the hearing aid, you give it back to them and you get a refund. So you got to make sure that you go. I mean, that's very important. There are federal rules that govern it at a certain age, and I don't know when that age kicks in, but hearing aids can be brought back. And you want to see if a hearing aid helps your tinnitus during the day. For many people with tinnitus, improving those sounds that they can hear immediately begins to mask the tinnitus. That's number one. Now, when the room is quiet, you don't want a quiet room. So
no.
When you're home, you want to have some music in the background or the TV on or the radio. You want to have something else that your brain attends to. The tinnitus is there, but somehow the brain then laps onto the real sounds and forgets the fake sounds. And then when you go to sleep at night, what people often do, and that's why radios, old-fashioned clock radios, which my kids don't even know about, often have music and sounds that you can listen to as you're going to sleep. And then you find a station or music or a DVD or an iPod, whatever you want to use, so that when you go to sleep at night, it is not in a quiet room. It's a room with quiet sounds. And it doesn't have to be white noise that people talk about on a radio. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be the ocean. I put on one of those ocean things once, and I found that I was getting up and going to the bathroom every 5 to 10 minutes. You just wanted me.
I've tried that.
Yeah. You found that made me want to urinate. I'm trying to go to sleep, and I go, I got to go potty. You know, it was a strange kind of a thing. But it can be music. But what you want to do is you want sound to be with you. Sound is your friend. So from a hearing aid and from a non-quiet room point of view, that's how you manage it. And you could reduce it 50-75% and make it 50-75% less problematic. Those would be my recommendations. And it'll always be there because you can always think about it and you'll find it there.
Yeah.
That's what.
But I have a little ray of hope. Well, I had it and now I don't. It went away.
You learn how to deal with it and it can disappear. It can disappear. Yours may have been infection involved also.
Yeah.
So you may have had a different form of it, but it sounds like he's around engines and, you know, as you said, engines and other loud things, race cars and shooting.
Yeah.
So that'll all do it. So good luck. Let us know. Like I said, it doesn't have to be the ocean you're listening to because that might disturb your sleep.
Okay.
Listen to public radio.
Thank you much.
Yep, thank you very much for the call. And before we clock out for the week, Zorba, let's take care of a little Zorba Pastor and Your Health grammar police business. This isn't necessarily a fine, but Deputy D from Wisconsin takes issue with your choice of words to describe your pilgrimage to our great state. She writes, Zorba, you mentioned that you moved down to Wisconsin from Chicago. Why do people in Illinois say that? Do they consider Wisconsin beneath them? Well, then, why do so many come here to vacation and drive crazy? Wisconsin is north of Chicago. North is up. I would never say I'm going up to Chicago. Love you anyway.
I have the answer to it. I'll tell you exactly what the answer is. Chicago is the center of the universe when you live in Chicago. The center
everything
of the
else
universe.
Is down.
Everything else is downstate. Everything else is called downstate. Everything is called downstate.
Yeah, but that's because the
even
state
north,
is below
no,
Chicago.
No. You've got Rockford. You've got a whole bunch of
and
stuff.
And that's not downstate.
No, there's nothing upstate. No one says upstate. Everything outside of Chicago is downstate. You know what? It never occurred to me. It's because they think they're better in Chicago. She's right.
Well, if Zorba's got you twisted up, down or all around, let us know by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or find us on Facebook.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg, the Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor of WPR are the two stir-crazy guys responsible for this hour. Our theme music is by Leon Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1208Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.